I kind of had the launch because, like, I was on unemployment. They don't kick you off unemployment in Australia. Mm. They just make it increasingly annoying to be on unemployment.
Yeah.
So, you know, work for the dole programs, volunteering, you know, more and more hoops. And it got to the point where there was just, you know, reaching too many hoops. Mm. So I need to figure out if this was actually going to work out at all, or if I had to go get a menial job and live a life of quiet despair. Fortunately, it worked out.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
So, hi and welcome everyone to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that is again going back to Australia today with a small indie author known as Travis DeVerrell. You may know him as Shirtaloon. You know, I just thought that I would continue my long streak of inviting small indie authors. So I'm very happy that you could make it. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
Definitely not lonely.
If you don't know what that was about, either look at Reddit or subscribe to the bonus material. Either works. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, but I'm good.
Okay, awesome. I mean, in general, for those viewers who don't know you yet, you have written a story called He Who Finds the Monsters. You are currently at a lot of chapters. I think you're writing book 11 right now, right?
I'm writing book 11. There are 9 books out. Book 10 comes out at the end of November.
Oh, great. Ooh.
What came out today or yesterday? No, today. I think it was chapter 826.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Which is a lot now that I think about it.
Yeah, don't think about it too much.
Mm. No, it's fine, you know. Put in a lot of work to get there, and I'm pretty happy with how it turned out, by and large.
Yeah. Did you ever look at the Patreon rankings?
The Patreon rankings? There's a site called Graftreon.
Mm-hmm.
Someone sent me a link to that. It was like Defier or Actus or someone sent me a link because I like briefly got to the top of the writer charts.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
Yeah. Last I looked, I was number 2 behind some guy who wasn't actually a writer. He was doing like video game logs or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. So
definitely. I suppose I could go look that up now. That's not desperate at all.
Anything to save the loneliness. Oh my God.
Oh, let's see what we can find. I am, like number 5.
Oh, man. How the mighty have fallen.
Except, hang on. A lot of that is I just took a month off, so my Patreon wasn't on. But that's fine. But I'm looking at the first 3, and they're all like video game log stuff, like Sims 4 custom content.
That is technically writing in some ways.
Yeah, so imposter syndrome is, I think, something that just about everyone runs into once they start having some success.
Yeah.
Especially in, you know, creative fields, because we've all got that artistic temperament. And that sort of insecurity that drives us to create.
So a friend of mine, another editor coach, actually came to me and I was like, I don't know if I'm good at this job. People are telling me I'm good, but people are telling me I'm bad. What's up? And he came to me and he said, like, yeah, Max, but how do you actually know you're any good at having imposter syndrome? And that clicked for me. That clicked.
Yeah.
What if they all find out you're just faking imposter syndrome?
Yeah. Because, you know, when I started off, because I, you know, started off unemployed when I started doing this. And like, the actual success part was very sudden, but I'd actually been working on my story for about 18 months, maybe 2 years before I ever started releasing. So I put in a lot of work. But once I actually started the releasing, the success, I got quite lucky in that regard. The success came pretty quick. But that also left me with this sense of, am I standing on a trap door? Is this all some sort of horrifying prank? And, you know, I struggled with that for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, enough validation, you know, enough checks clearing from the publisher and, you know, you do get over that kind of thing.
I think so.
Which is good, but yeah, it was something I struggled with for quite a while. Mm. Yeah, but now I'm at that point where I sort of, I don't need, you know, that validation anymore. Like when I was starting out, like the idea of getting to the top of like the Audible chart or the Kindle chart, was like, and you know, it took me quite a few books to get there. Like I'd get to like number two behind freaking Matthew McConaughey's, you know, book of gibberish nonsense. And, you know, I'd be like, God damn you, McConaughey. And like, you're doing all right if you're yelling at Matthew McConaughey for beating you out. Like, you know, I was like, oh, I got number two again. What? Will Smith slapped someone in the face and then released an autobiography. God damn you, Will Smith. Like, you know, like if you're getting cranky because you didn't beat Will Smith, then you don't get to have imposter syndrome anymore. It's like, no, dude, you're doing fine.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's. I think I might have sealed your doom. I bought Will Smith's autobiography before I bought You Friends with Monsters. It was me. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure it was just that one number.
Yeah.
Like that was the.
Just like an election, like three people like not voting for you, and you basically lose it.
Yeah.
But actually, okay, this brings me to the first point. Why did you write this story? And how? Because you mentioned you were unemployed and you were just going like, I'm gonna write a story.
Okay. So, you know, I think like a lot of people, I've, you know, been writing here and there for many years, like I used to write these stories in back in high school that were shockingly, shockingly bad. very terrible. And, you know, that's fine. Writing's a skill. And, you know, you can't expect to be great at a skill when you first start.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. So, you know, I write and I write and I improved over time. But I'm a lazy procrastinator by nature. So, you know, and I'm also sort of a pantser, meaning someone who doesn't sort of naturally plot out everything I do. So, you know, there's a few sort of badly written half novels that, you know, got deleted whenever, you know, my computer at the time got chucked out. and no particularly great loss there. I mean, there's always stuff like that you can pull out and go back to. There are ideas and that stuff. Then I've, you know, pulled out and recycled. Yeah, I do not have a lot of marketable skills. So, you know, with lots of, you know, unemployment, dead-end jobs, that kind of thing. So I found myself living quite near to the local university here. And so I said, you know what, bugger it. I'm going to go and I'm going to do an English degree. I'm going to do a bunch of creative writing units, learn to actually do this thing better than I can now. I don't think you need to go and do a creative writing degree or whatever to get good at writing. But I do think it can, you know, help develop your sense of narrative. The best thing it did was put me in a bunch of creative writing units with a bunch of other writers. And because if you want to get, if you want to improve your writing, then having something you've written come back with like a stack of 20 critiques covered in red, saying, explaining everything you did wrong. Like, A, it toughens you up to criticism, which I think is essential, an essential skill. And it really helps you go through what you're doing wrong, what you're doing great. And that was absolutely fantastic. But I sort of reached a point where I got my degree, met a bunch of fantastic people. But then I started doing some postgraduate work and writing like very differently to my, you know, sort of published style. But I had great fun just doing the actual story component. I was doing a creative writing master. The actual creative writing part was great, but then there was sort of the attached research component, the sort of, you know, exploring the context. Mm-hmm. And I did not get into it to be, you know, doing a cross-generational exploration of masculinity in post-colonial Australia. Like, and I'm just, oh, I hate this so much. And that's when I realized, okay, I'm doing it again. I'm actually using this postgraduate work to stall, just biting the bullet and writing something. And I knew that I needed to write something, and it had to be extremely silly, which is how we got to a story about an interdimensional kung fu wizard. So I actually just stopped the postgraduate work immediately. Mm-hmm. By the way, in the English department, because I knew I was getting closer and closer to wanting to do some lit RPG, because I found myself having to explain what it was to people in the English department again and again. Like, I did a unit called Popular Genres that was great. You know, looked at steampunk and romance and, you know, obviously fantasy. Mm-hmm. It did not look at lit RPG, but this was sort of just right before it kind of really exploded. I don't know if they'd look at it now a bit more, because now they have a graduate who's done quite respectably in that genre. But
who?
Yeah, his name's Jeff. You don't know him.
Oh, okay.
But no, but I have gone back and, like, you know, talked to tutorial groups and stuff as a guest. And that was quite fun. But yeah, I just sat down and then started writing for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. You know, I did a great big draft. I chucked it out because it was heinously bad. And that was just never having finished a long form book before. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd done, you know, short stories and whatnot, and like half a novel before it crapped out because I didn't plan a single goddamn thing. But this time, you know, had a plan. And I stuck to it. Like, I made, because the way I end up writing now is I have a sort of very bare bones plan that I'll follow to the end. Mm-hmm. The problem is I didn't actually flesh out the bones at all. I just left it as bones. So I got to the end and I've shortchanged the world building. I've shortchanged the character development. I've shortchanged the plot. Like, it's all just, yeah. Like, my first three books are 250 something chapters. Mm-hmm. The original version was 66. It was not good stuff. And that's fine. Like, cause I did that, and then I sat down and just completely rewrote it from scratch, and it's worked out pretty well. And part of that process was looking at how I could actually turn this into something I can, you know, make some money off. So I started doing research into how to, you know, do a successful release on Royal Road. Mm-hmm. I started looking into getting attention and building a Patreon and when and how to do those things. And, you know, a lot of that was just sort of scouring guides and Royal Road forums and that sort of thing. First to Fire has probably the best one of those going right now. It's somewhere in the Royal Road forums. And when people ask, you know, what's the process for being successful, I tend to just point them right there. But it actually reached the point where I kind of had the launch because, like, I was on unemployment. They don't kick you off unemployment in Australia. Mm. They just make it increasingly annoying to be on unemployment.
If you are a friend of the Cazoo ad, you have to be very, very strong now. I regret to inform you that Sherloon went and bought the tier that removes the Cazoo ad from all podcasts. And now it's just gone. So you got Sherloon to thank for that. On the other hand, if you want to add the Cazoo ad again, there's a tier for that too. Thanks so much for listening, and let's get on with the show. Yeah.
So, you know, work for the Dole programs, volunteering, you know, more and more hoops. And it got to the point where there was just, you know, reaching too many hoops. Mm-hmm. So I need to figure out if this was actually going to work out at all, or if I had to go get a menial job and live a life of quiet despair. fortunately, it worked out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I ended up starting releasing, and then I started learning all the other lessons, like the fact that, a lot of being a writer isn't just writing, which is why, you know, all of a sudden I'm doing like 18-hour days as I have to learn everything involved and, you know, do all the fiddly little bits that take way more time. Suddenly I'm learning the term community engagement and then doing that. Uh-huh. And, you know, there were a lot of mistakes early on. Like, there are certain people who are going to have opinions about your story that you don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And starting at a place where you're sort of respectfully trying to explain your perspective of an author and then sort of escalating drastically from there is not a good way to go. Like, for example, my protagonist was a retail worker who gets, you know, isekai'd. And, you know, he kills a person, he has a breakdown. Mm-hmm. And,
as you do.
Yeah. And I had people saying, oh, you know, I don't know why this guy's such a pussy. He should be like snapping necks. And I'm like, dude, he sold like office supplies. He wasn't in the SAS. And which is probably good. We've had some problems with our SAS here in Australia. They've been a bit war crimey.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of years. Like, because the SAS is our, you know, Delta Force Navy SEAL, super elite special forces guys, and they strongly considered just eliminating them entirely because they were just too war crimey.
Huh.
So probably best that wasn't the model on which I based my main character.
I won't talk about the problems we had with the GSG-9. So go ahead.
Yeah. I think everyone who has like some very behind the scenes sort of special forces people, it just the combination of a lot of power and not a lot of oversight is always problematic, and that's in fact a key thing in my story. So
yeah, and their job is to effectively probably kill people. So
Well, certainly involves killing people.
Yeah, and there's a certain mindset that is required and that it breeds. So
yeah,
cool. Okay, so back to the story.
Okay, so yeah, so I'm at the point where I just sort of have to release, because it's getting increasingly annoying, but So I start releasing on Royal Road, and things go very well very quickly because, like one of the keys to Royal Road, you know, it's quite a bit different now, but the key is still getting on the front page, whether that's, you know, Rising Stars or I think it was called Trending back then. But once you get on the front page, then your readership goes up and the 0.5 ratings start to hit you.
Yep.
But, you know, I was lucky I didn't get too many. But actually, I actually started the I've only started, I think, one thread on the Royal Road Forum. And I did this like maybe a week after I started releasing chapters.
I saw that. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was called something like, I just got my first 0.5 rating and now I'm sad.
Yeah.
And that apparently resonated with people. Mm-hmm. Except for the next maybe two and a half years, it kept getting necroed. Every now and again, I'd get notifications like someone replied on this thing you did like 2.5 years ago. And the context is so extremely different. Because back then, I was an unknown Royal Road author, like so many thousands of people, you know, and just sharing experience. So it's almost like a sort of odd time capsule-y thing, given the context. And then, because I'm on a Discord for Aethon on my ebook publisher with a bunch of other authors, like Zogarth and stuff. And one of them found this thread. And, oh, my God, they would not let me hear the end of it. It's like, oh, no, Porsche got a 0.5 rating. Wow.
Did I take that thread, screenshot it, and collage it with the image of your Patreon? Maybe, but...
But, yeah, but I got lucky because I got on the front page sort of by a cheat. Because one of the category, like, because there's various top categories, top rated, top whatever. Mm. And one of them is for reviews.
Mm.
And there was a review for my story that was the top rated review on Royal Road for something like 7 weeks. So someone's review got on there, but it, because it was a review for my story, I'm just sitting there on the front page. Nice. So by the time I've been releasing for a month, my readership has grown quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure how quite nicely, but that sort of became evident once I started the Patreon, because it had been a month and I was starting to get people asking when the Patreon comes. Because when I did my release, I did... like 15 chapters in my first week and then 10 chapters in my second week and then sort of hit my regular schedule of 5 chapters, which I still can't believe I thought was a good idea. Well, I mean, so it ostensibly was a good idea, but because of that sort of de-escalation from that initial burst, because I think it's always good to have enough for people to dig into, people were like, you're doing a Patreon, right? Because, you know, everyone knows Patreon means advanced chapters.
Ah. Did you have any of these?
Yeah. So, but I had the chapters.
Oh, okay.
Like I had them good to go. Like I said, I'd researched and I'd planned. Mm. So I was ready for that. And one of the things I'd done, and I don't think you'd even do it anymore. I think they removed it, which was to set goals in Patreon.
Yeah, they took it out. Mm.
Yeah. So... and like I said, I was unemployed at the time.
Mm.
So I set myself a couple of goals, like basically enough money to get me sort of halfway off unemployment and then all the way off unemployment. I'm like, okay, I seem to be building a nice audience here. If I can actually hit those goals in a couple of months, that'll be awesome. And I put like bonus chapter releases, like basically double chapter releases for a week for each goal. And I had the chapters there, like they needed editing and polishing, but they were fine. Okay. That was going to take ages. It took a day and a half to clear both goals once I actually launched the damn Patreon.
Half what?
A day and a half.
A day and a half. Oh, my.
To hit, because like it wasn't like some huge amount of money. It was just basically enough to replace unemployment benefits.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't a huge amount. And that got hit pretty quick.
Cue in DJ Khaled.
But that was sort of the start of me not getting any sleep for the rest of the year. Because it's like all of a sudden I've got to, you know, edit and review and polish these chapters up to a releasable state. And I did, and it was great. I spent the next year explaining, no, I'm never, ever doing double chapters weeks ever again. but that was sort of, yeah. So once the actual Patreon hit, that's because that lucky break of getting onto the front page of Royal Road really gave me that tailwind that helped push me forward. So that was fantastic. It made the Patreon launch great. But a week before, so the week before the Patreon is going live, so it's all set. I've got everything all set up. It's good to go. And I'm launching on like the Monday of next week. And then I accidentally get a job interview, which is fine because you've got, you know, one of the things you got to do on unemployment is looking for jobs, and that's perfectly fine. You know, getting a job would have been nice, but the timing was not nice. The job itself was like a temp gig doing like call center work, because they passed a law at around that time that basically said that the utility companies, when they were instituting things that would completely screw over the people who paid them for utilities, they were now legally required to send people a letter saying, yes, we're going to screw you over now. And it was like retroactive for however long. So they were about to send out a bunch of letters to everyone saying, yeah, we're about to bend you over the table. So they were expecting an influx of calls. So they were hiring some call center people. And I'd done that kind of work before. So I applied and got an interview. That's fine. It was at this industrial park, like way outside of town, like just beyond like public transport.
Oh, God. Range.
So I took a very expensive taxi out there for this job interview. And yeah, well, I wasn't opposed to getting a job because, you know, money is better than being unemployed. The timing was bad. So I was trying to tank this interview. So I'm just like super casual. Just problem is not giving a crap looks a lot like confidence.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just super relaxed, super chill. They offered me a job immediately. I'm like, oh my God. Cause like if the Patreon thing works, cause basically if I got a job, like, cause I'd set myself a schedule for writing and I knew how much writing I could do. Like during my sort of research process, I'd figured out how much writing can I do without killing myself. And I figured that out. I was wrong because I didn't know how much non-writing would be involved. But that's a whole other thing. But so I had sort of the plan for the whole writing thing. So if Patreon worked out, great. I can sort of dive into this writing thing. I didn't have a job. I could just go full-time immediately, even if it wasn't paying straight away. Except then I got this job offer, which meant I'm stuck. Either like, and the thing is, I wouldn't know if the Patreon was going to work until after I'd accepted the job or not. But if I refuse the job, my unemployment benefits get cut off. If I accept the job, I then, and the thing worked out, I'd have to quit on my like second day. but as it turns out, my job references, who were all like interstate for supervisors from some work I'd done previously, had all like sort of bailed. So I effectively had no references when they tried to check them. Like, we couldn't get in contact with anyone. So yeah, we're actually going to have to withdraw the job offer.
Oh no.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh no. well, those are the breaks. Like, you know, I think that may have been like the most positive response they've ever heard to say to a job rejection. But then the Patreon worked out, thankfully.
Yeah.
And I got to go into my sort of job network agency and say, because when I was doing the thing, they knew I was writing a book, and that was taking up a large portion of my time. Mm. And, you know, there was a lot of, yes, we know you're writing your little book. That's lovely. What we really need you to do is get a menial job that takes up all your time and energy, which I didn't love.
Yeah.
There was that sort of moment of triumph of sort of marching in there. It was like, no, it's working out quite nicely. Thank you very much.
Vindication.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, yeah. Nice. Like, just watch, you know, that was very nice. And it did work out very quickly for me. I know, a lot of people sort of struggle. They release books and books and books. I got very lucky. I think luck is a matter of preparation, so you're ready to seize an opportunity when it comes along.
Yeah.
And I definitely did that. But, you know, you need that lucky break to be there for you to seize it when it happens. And for me, it was, you know, sort of arsing my way into being on the front page of Royal Road when I 100% didn't earn it. And things went very well from there. And the timing could not have been better. Because I started releasing at a time where indie publishers like, you know, Aethon, Podium, sort of became aware of Royal Road and the sort of views that were getting done by the people on the popular list. So there was something of a gold rush to snatch up all the big Royal Road authors, because I was way too, you know, overworked and stressed to even look at sort of self-publishing or anything like that. Like, yeah, you can theoretically make a lot more money self-publishing than getting published. But when the real treasure is time, they can take those times, you know, constraints of doing that off of you. And I think that is absolutely worth the trade-off for me. Self-publishing works for a lot of people. And that's great. But they came along, the books came out. I think it was somewhere around book three that they really started taking off. Because there's a lot of debate on Royal Road about whether or not you should go Kindle Unlimited. Because there is that exclusivity that they require. And that means taking down anything that gets published, any chapters that go into a book that gets published have to come down for Royal Road. And there's a lot of people that really do not like that. But the problem is Kindle Unlimited represents most of the paying Lit RPG audience.
Yes.
Like Lit RPG readers are voracious, much like romance readers. And
you take that Kindle back.
I think there are massive, massive crossovers in sort of the audience model and the production model between romance and Lit RPG. And that's why they both thrive on Kindle Unlimited, because that is a great deal for very, very hungry readers. So I think something like 80% of my ebook sales are Kindle Unlimited. Last time I checked, it's been a while, but yeah, it was something like 80% of my ebook income comes from KU.
Can you even sell anything outside of KU?
Yes, you can on Amazon.
Okay. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So people just buying ebooks individually, it's about 20%, 19%. There is like a 0.5% who buy the actual print on demand paperbacks. But it's pretty much, Lit RPG is a digital audience.
Yeah.
And they're a hungry audience, and that means KU. Although I have also done very well on audio. So I've got a great narrator in Heath Miller. And that's also worked out very well for me. But I was very worried, because I'd built my audience on Royal Road. So there was that fear of going KU, taking it down. I knew there was sort of negative reaction. So I was, you know, I was worried that it wouldn't, that I'd stop having that there for people to read book one and sort of feed. And, you know, was I grabbing money right now, but gimping myself from generating new readers down the road?
Yeah.
That turned out to be the exact opposite of the case, because like Royal Road is big, and bigger now than then, but they're not bigger than Amazon. Like the number of people, that Amazon reaches is basically most of the English speaking planet. And so, you know, when I went on KU, when I went on Audible, when I, you know, came off Royal Road for the published stuff, I found my Patreon going up like vastly. And part of that was everyone was going up vastly. Like sort of the, you know, the big guys were making what, $3,000 a year. So $3,000 a month, maybe on Patreon, and you know, years later, it's 10 times that. but a part of that is everyone's been moving into Amazon, you know, over this lit RPG boom, and that's getting people. It's driving people to Patreon, and I think it is driving people to Royal Road as well.
Yeah,
because I still release everything for free on Royal Road before it gets published. And, you know, I 100% intend to continue to do that for the entire series. There will be people who've only ever read it for free on Royal Road, and I have zero problem with that. Like, I spent a lot of time, like a lot of my adult life, with very, very little money. So free options are absolutely fantastic. You know, but I try to, you know, now that I'm not in that situation anymore, you know, I try to be less, you know, avoid piracy and that sort of thing in my media consumption. Like, but, you know, that's not always viable either, because Game of Thrones here in Australia, basically Fox, like Rupert Murdoch, basically bought the rights to broadcast Game of Thrones here in Australia. But as opposed to putting it on TV, he put it on his cable network that nobody has, and you had to buy it as part of some great big package of stuff. So you had to go get cable, and then you had to go get this great big package if you wanted to watch Game of Thrones. Obviously, everyone pirated, like everyone. Basically, the whole country was pirating Game of Thrones to the point where they actually took the ISPs to court.
Oh my God.
Over it. And the High Court of Australia, Supreme Court, basically told them to stick it up their ass. Everyone was pirating it because they made it so goddamn hard to actually get a hold of if they, you know, didn't want to spend like, you know, $200 a month on sports packages and movies that everybody's already got on streaming. So, and so they didn't actually legalize downloading Game of Thrones, but they like they did the next best thing.
The whole convenience thing.
And I totally get I totally get that. That being also said, like, you know, all the pirate sites that have, you know, stories like mine and Zogarth's and whoever on there can be a problem because Amazon uses bots to make sure that KU exclusivity is being held up to. And if they get like a false flag, a false positive from one of those pirate sites saying, oh, he hasn't taken everything down, that can mess with your book launch. I haven't copped that. The closest I've got is apparently they use different bots for like audio, ebook, and like the published stuff. So the paperback thing got a false positive from some pirate site, thought I was you know, still had it up, so they shut down the paperback aspect on launch day. which was actually fine because I sell almost zero physical books.
Okay, that was fun.
But yeah, I found So basically, that was it. The combination of the Lit RPG boom, you know, sort of starting to releasing on Amazon, it was all fantastic timing for a lot of Lit RPG authors coming from Royal Road.
Wow.
And that's sort of left us where we are today.
Which is at top five of the Patreon writing thing right under the Sims mods. So absolutely. Cool. Yeah. Pretty darn good.
But yeah, like I said, like I started talking about imposter syndrome because like that validation was really important. When I was dealing with that. But now I don't sort of need that so much. I'm doing well. I don't really need sort of, you know, the great reviews of thing. As long as, you know, I'm doing well, I've got money rolling in, that's all great. Because I know there's a lot of bitterness, like in some of the Royal Road forums, authors who maybe aren't doing so well. Like I know Zogarth has been fairly active in the Royal Road forums. And so as probably the most successful sort of active forum user there, he's copped a lot of accusations of like gatekeeping and all the stuff, saying basically, oh, you've got all the readers. They're not reading the good stuff because they're all reading your mass produced. And it is hot nonsense, absolute hot nonsense. Like everyone who's successful in Lit RPG is lifting up the genre. It really is the tide raises all ships situation. Like, yeah, because all the people who are doing well, every person they bring into the genre is someone new who's going to go looking for the next thing. And, you know, some of those authors who aren't doing so, they might be the next thing. Like some of them will be because, you know, someone's going to be.
And also the idea of you are keeping all the readers. It's not like Zogarth is running around with a whip and like telling
you to read a story. No, you're not allowed to read anything but Primal Hunter.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand if you're like super sad that your story isn't doing well, but that's mostly a you problem. If your story isn't doing well, like either you're not writing to market. I mean, like, fuck it. My story has 1,000 followers. Like, am I crying? Yeah. No. I think it's a great fucking success. I hit top 10 rising stars. I'm fucking doped. Like, it's great.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, I mean, like, it's a thing of measurement. Sorry, like, this really riles me up.
Oh, yeah. Like, probably the most insane thing I ever saw in this regard was someone talking about how his Patreon wasn't enough to cover his Spotify premium. And he was complaining because how can he be a writer without Spotify premium?
If you think about that, that doesn't make any sense.
No. that's nonsense. Like, you know, like it just makes me, you know, think of like, how the hell did Hemingway write The Old Man and the Sea when he couldn't listen to Maroon 5?
Okay. So fair enough. Fair enough, you know, without being too cranky about this. Like, maybe for them, it's their arbitrary measurement of like, hey, I want to be able to buy my Spotify with my Patreon. And that's a perfectly legit goal, right?
Well, and I've no problem with that. Goal setting is fantastic. But complaining that you can't be a writer unless you've got Spotify premium, it's like, no, there's ads. I'll never create my masterpiece.
Yeah, I think maybe that didn't come out right for that person. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a lot of bitterness, and I get it. Like, because a lot of, like, Royal Road is a massive platform for authors to start off with.
Yeah.
It's, like, absolutely fantastic. But if you're not writing, like, fantasy lit RPG, the further you get from fantasy lit RPG, the harder your road is to move forward. And a lot of it is, you know, and especially like back in the day, lit RPG where the main character's a dude, and the women don't get too uppity.
Yeah.
Like lots of lit, like especially like 3-4 years ago when some of the big ones now were just starting out. There'd be like LGBT characters, and there'd be some hard pushback for that. And yours is like delving right into that, right?
Mm. Oh yeah, at the very beginning.
Yep. Yeah, because I've got a lot of sort of private messages from people just saying things like, thank you for including, like, because I don't have a lot of that stuff. I don't push it hard, but there are characters in there. And, you know, I've got messages saying, thank you for including this, you know, without making a big deal about it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I want to say thank you in a personal message, because if I put this out in like the public forums, I'm going to get swamped by loans.
Oh, absolutely. So for the ironic part is that for me, the whole like non-binary character at the beginning, that has nothing to do with the story mostly. I'm actually like, I'm keeping the character as it is. Don't get me wrong. I'm very proud of this character, but
oh no, you shouldn't. Should absolutely not compromise on that.
It's just like the fact that they're non-binary is absolutely like it comes up later on, but I need to read it at the beginning anyway. So
yeah, it's a character trait like brown hair or
I spoke with an author friend of mine about this, and he said that I should really do more with this character or leave it out. And I do think that's a fair criticism because the author I'm talking to is a successful guy. And he says like, well, basically what you did is you created the analogy of creating a black character and calling him Jamal. Like, kind of get where he's coming from.
Yeah. Mm. I completely agree. And that's why I don't delve like super hard into this because like I don't want to tokenize.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
And I don't want to speak poorly for communities that, like, I'm not a part of, that. And I'm not qualified to be a representative because I don't sort of understand those experiences. Mm. So I have the characters there, but they're just there, you know, doing whatever. And then, and it's not like, you know, just one character, but it's also not like sort of going out and trumpeting, like all my SJW accusations tend to come from things like like economic, you know, viewpoints and, you know, anti-capitalism
and autocracy,
authoritarianism. I guess the one thing I do push, and this is like sort of the most milquetoast these days of thingos, is, well, not really feminism so much as just having female characters who do things that aren't chase after dudes. Like, I have a lot of female characters, and that shouldn't be a big deal. Yeah. Like, it's not like I'm harping on women empowerment or anything. I've just built a world where, at least where everyone has magic, it's a balanced playing field, because a lot of the factors that go into sexual discrimination are eliminated.
Exactly. Mostly what I really liked about your approach to this is that the entire idea of pregnancy and that kind of stuff can all be like magically solved, and that women no longer, like, even in societies where there's like lots of danger coming outside from monster surges and all that kind of stuff, women don't need to stay in the house and keep the children safe because there's only one woman, but there can be 10 men. Yeah. Men are more expendable. That doesn't... Slow down, Max. Let's do it again. That's just not true anymore, right? So, because women can fight and they are just as capable as men. And with magic being in the mix, that's doubly true.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's really the only approach I take. I don't try to harp on this thing. But when I first started off, every time I'd introduce a new female character, because I have a lot of them, and I'd be like, okay, so here comes Farrah. She's the first one. Okay, so she's the love interest. And then comes Anissa. Okay, so she's the love interest.
And that turned out,
She's the love interest. Except then I had two female characters show up, not related to the main character at all. They get their own perspective chapter. And the response wasn't, a sort of mixed response. There was half, okay, so she'll eventually be the love interest. And that permeated for quite a long time. That was Sophie, when Sophie and Blender came
along. Oh, yeah,
and
you hope. Yeah,
the
you
other should. Half of the response was, this bitch has got to die. I actually, on my Patreon long ago, this was somewhere around maybe book 8.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yeah.
Is that where the whole Nubile Slave thing came from?
No.
Oh, it was just, no. Like, just as a response, as a kind of like little bit of an FU. Okay.
Yeah. No. No, I did a Patreon post because this was when I'd reintroduced, this was, book 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. I'd reintroduced Vespa Ramaros. She was like Zara's aunt who Jason had like maybe one scene with in book 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. But she came back because Jason goes to the place where she lives and she ends up having to interact with Jason a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are like, oh, this bitch has got to die because, you know, she was acting in a way that was antagonistic to the main character, even if it was just because they had a personality clash. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, this bitch has got to die. And I did this great big long post about how people calling for the death of my latest female character was like my Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because it just feels like every day I get up, and people are calling for the death of my latest female character.
You know what time it is? That's right. It's a new ad. And this time I have 2 amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have 2 friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian Trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. Oh, man.
But audiences, like, self-select. Like, I've been very lucky in terms of like a continually growing audience, so I do get more and more people in, so I do get a lot of different perspectives. But by and large, sort of all that early stuff, like, you know, Sophie coming along and not getting immediately killed, and all these female characters who weren't falling in love with the protagonist, and you know, and the LGBT characters, like Rufus gets revealed as a bisexual just when one of the other characters comes out of his room and does a walk of shame.
Is he available? the way you describe him in the books is very attractive.
Yeah, you'd hope, right?
Yeah.
But that, and like a lot of people were completely missed that fact. Like, I've got like 5 books, like, what do you mean Rufus is bisexual? But
well, if their gaydar is that bad, maybe that's why.
But all of this stuff, and like the atheism, like my protagonist starts atheist, meets a god. Okay, not an atheist anymore. I definitely believe in gods. There's one. But just the concept of atheism sent people into a frenzy. Like, an absolute frenzy. I got people saying, oh, you know, in the comment section, like, all atheists are secretly Chinese assassins.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and I've got a lot of, like, landmarks, like, in those early things as aspects of the world or aspects of the characters come out, like, I didn't get pushback on Rufus being a bisexual. I was expecting to. I got way more pushback on just strong female characters, like just female characters doing stuff. Like, some of them get a pass, like Danielle Gellar, people tend to love, but a lot of them, especially if they clash with the protagonist, they get a lot of hate.
I think, okay, so this is very interesting to me.
Yeah,
I think Danielle, especially, and this ties into my bigger question later, Danielle especially is so well beloved because she kind of takes a motherly role, right?
Yeah.
So, and my question is, why do you think that is?
I think, well, there's definitely a pattern of anyone who's sort of antagonistic towards mm-hmm. Jason getting a lot more hate than mm-hmm. others. Not dudes so much, but female characters. Mm-hmm. And Danielle was never like that. Danielle Geller was like the person who just looked at Jason mm-hmm. when he was still completely rubbish, mm-hmm. saw piles of potential, and started immediately putting it to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it.
The question I had beyond that was, why do you think that it is especially antagonistic female characters that get so much hate?
I just think that it's becoming a lot more diverse now, but mm-hmm. like, especially a few years ago, like there was a very large core of lonely internet dudes mm-hmm. reading with RPG. Mm-hmm. And they have been famously not super open to mm-hmm. women doing things.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
I mean, because we go back a few years, we're talking the era of like female Ghostbusters. And, you know, while the movie isn't great, it doesn't deserve the kind of hate that it got.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found pushback against women versus any of the other stuff. Like I've got like a minor character who's like a magical trans person. Mm-hmm. Like just every few years, they'll just sort of magically transition. Mm-hmm. Got no pushback on that at all because it comes quite late in the series. Mm-hmm. I think at that point, my audience is mostly sort of like self-selected in.
Yeah.
Like all the sort of, because there are absolutely stories out there for angry internet people to jump on. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking with Heath Miller, who narrates my books, mm-hmm. and mine was the first lit RPG that he's done, but he said he's actually turned them down before mm-hmm. Because he read them and just didn't want to be reading that content. Didn't want to take all that time going through all that stuff and voicing opinions that he really, really didn't agree with.
There's the few. I mean, if you want to know my particular preferences towards some of these, you can find posts of myself somewhere. But there's some that are completely atrocious. You know, with like mind control is always hard to write, but then it's mind control and it's completely glossed over that this is essentially sexual assault. And and then the main characters are completely fine with it. He doesn't question it ever. Like, I couldn't read that.
There's stuff like that. Like, because I saw some of the stuff, the translated stuff coming out of China. Because when I was just first to getting into it, that's the stuff that was everywhere.
Yeah.
So I didn't finish a lot of those, but I started a lot of them. And some of those, the fact, like, the fact that they were released as opposed to used as evidence was shocking to me.
I read some from Russia where I was like, I can see the cultural inference here, but I do think there's it's not that these people are like evil. I just really think they just didn't think this thing through at all because it just doesn't matter to them.
Oh, yeah, because a lot of the Chinese ones just sort of screamed the one-child policy has really screwed over the men in that country. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there was a lot of like, I don't know that they've ever actually met a woman. And that is just a massive cultural thing that they're still struggling to deal with.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember that. That was not a good idea. But before we go down that road, I want to ask you, beyond don't write that, what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
I don't know. I mean, because I think it varies person to person. Like the best advice is the advice that you really, really need. yeah, so some people sort of naturally fall into certain patterns and they've got a whole bunch of good habits. And I think everyone will naturally fall into certain good habits, certain bad ones. So it really comes down to the writing advice that you need. Like, for me, it was probably just keep writing, stop going back and trying to fix everything. Just keep writing, get to the end. Mm-hmm. Cause that's kind of what I needed to get to the end. Mm. But then you've got like, there's lots of bad writing advice out there. Like, there's sort of famously bad writing advice. Like, if you're not driven to write, like if you're not just have a constant need to write, then don't write because it's not going to work out. Shockingly bad advice. There are actually very, very few people who are so driven they just keep cranking it out. Like I think actors is one of those rare people who just keeps cranking it out. They've got that sort of natural drive. Mm. I don't have that. Like I'll get it. And I use a metaphor, the creative tank.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I've taken some time off, the creative tank's full and, you know, I'm keen to go. But eventually the creative tank will run out if you write at the kind of rate you need to be churning out, especially serial fiction. And then I need a break. But that sort of keep going, keep plugging along. And the thing that actually ended up working for me that got me to finish was setting a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of how I enacted that particular piece of advice, which is just keep going, which was just going, okay, so, you know, right now I don't have a job. So I'm going to write each day from this time, each day. And I did, because if you wait until inspiration strikes, you are never going to write a book.
Put ass in chair.
I sat down and I wrote, and it wasn't always great, but that's what revising and editing is for, or chucking it out and rewriting it entirely. I don't do that too often, but I have done it, and it tends to work out amazingly.
Can you talk about a little bit about like just two or three sentences? How many hours do you actually write? How many do you revise? Like, what's your cycle there?
Okay, so perfect world, I'll have some buffer chapters. So I'll write a draft. And when I've got buffer chapters, my writing is just better because I'm less stressed. So I will tend to write a draft, then, you know, put that aside and then pull out whatever I wrote last week or, you know, whenever. That is going to be the next thing that gets released. It gets, because after I write a thing, I'll send it off to some of my friends and they'll look at it, send it back. They'll have notes that, you know, I may or may not say rude things at my screen about, not to them. I'll just, you know, like, are you, I'm still not perfect at taking criticism, but I'll get that back and I'll go through it, you know, revise it, and then I'll, you know, pass it out in mostly for proofreading, you know, do a final polish. Out it goes, and that's my thing for every chapter. But if I'm under the gun and I don't have any buffer chapters, that all gets done in a day, which I don't like doing it that way. I like to have those buffer chapters to go, but, you know, sometimes life just screws you.
Yep.
And sometimes the need for sleep or just straight up procrastination screws you. Like I am far from a flawless man.
Who is? Besides me, I mean.
but that's my process. How long it will take? Varies. Like I totally redid how I sort of schedule. Like I dropped back the number of chapters from 5 to 3 this year, because by the end of last year, I was wrecked. I was doing 18, 16, 20 hour days because I was just so exhausted that everything took 3 times as long.
To
And that meant I never got ahead with buffer chapters. So it was just this sort of cycle of being so tired. I never had time to get rest. And because I was never rested, everything took longer. So, yeah, I just took a huge break, reduced my thing. And I think my not just mental health, but also the actual quality of the work, I think, has improved from doing so. But so that would be my other best bit of advice. Get enough rest.
Take breaks.
Just really, because it solves so many problems. Everything will take less time and be better when you're done if you've had enough rest, which I have not had today. But that's because, you know, real life has encroached upon me once again. But yeah, so I can take anywhere up to, like, I've had 20-hour days.
Okay.
Usually when I'm breathtakingly tired, although sometimes it's because I'm doing some, like, great big long sequence, like a battle sequence. Like, the first time I had a real problem with this was... yeah, I did a really big battle sequence. It's the one from the end of book one. Great big battle, tons and tons of people. It's the first time I did a fight that wasn't one chapter, because I don't like to overextend fights, regardless of what the end of book nine might make you think. So, you know, I try to make fights, like if I'm actually showing them, make them important, make them sort of character driven, or just, you know, sometimes you have to do the big fight because that's what the story demands. Story demands the great big fight. It's the thing I'm worst at by far. So it takes me the longest. And the first time I did that big fight, I did the first draft of it. And that was just like a, you know, 20-hour day. For the first time I'd like worked that long when I was actually writing efficiently. And then it needed lots of work because, like, it's the hardest thing for me. So it needed multiple sort of revision passes, took me multiple days. And that was good because the whole thing ended up being multiple chapters. But that's something that makes me take a long time when I end up writing something that ends up really long and ends up getting revised into, like, I've done chapters that have turned into 2 weeks worth of chapters. By the time the revision process gets through it all. But then I'll just, sometimes I'll just have a day where it just goes shwoop, like just comes out buttery smooth. Like, it still needs, you know, the full revision process for polish and whatnot, but it'll just come out so easy. And those are the best days. I really, really needed to have one of those days yesterday, and I did. And when that happens, it's just like, oh my God, because otherwise I would have been working on this for so long and gotten so cranky.
Yeah, I can see.
Yeah, but yeah, sometimes it just, like, dialogue is the easiest thing for me. My series is very dialogue heavy for a reason. It's because it's the thing I enjoy the most. I think it's what I do best. Whereas, like, you know, battles and fights are the things I do the least well, which is why they tend to get the most work. Because dialogue comes out usually pretty close to where I want it to end up, whereas fights rarely do. They tend to get the most work and absorb the most time. But like I said earlier, it's about a skill. And I think I've improved vastly on how my fights work.
That's pretty good.
Over the course of the series.
So first bit of advice is to take breaks. And the other one is get, what was the other one?
Keep moving forward.
Keep moving forward. Like, keep the run and rolling.
Yeah, once you've actually finished, you can go back, like, and it depends, like, serial fiction versus writing a book, two different things.
Yeah. How, okay, so hold your horse for that one, because I need to know how you would do the whole revision process in serial fiction, because that's something I struggle with and it's very interesting to me. However,
yeah,
I also have bodily needs, like, for example, eating, and I would like to need that to do that right now. So how about we take five? I got some snacks.
Yeah.
And then we meet back here.
Sounds good.
Cool. I'll see you in five.
Cool.
Haha, cliffhanger. Why? Well, because, yeah, I don't know if you guys know this, but editing these podcasts takes a lot of time. And the good news is that Travis and I recorded about 4.5 hours of this thing, which I think is amazing. It took a lot of time and we had great fun doing this. However, this also means that I have to edit at least 12, 14 hours, like just working time editing the content, and I can't handle that right now. This is too much, and I can't handle that in 1 week for sure. So what I did is I split the content in half. So you're getting one full-size episode this week and then another full-size episode next week, with the Patreon part being cut out as usual. Okay, with all that being said, thank you so much for watching and or listening, and I'll see or hear you next time.